Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com.
This show looks at the career of James Caan, known for The Godfather, but whose work contains other gems.
I hope you enjoy the show. One actor turned down the lead in Blade Runner, Kramer vs. Kramer, The French Connection, MASH, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Apocalypse Now, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Love Story, and even Superman. If James Caan had accepted just a couple of these roles, his career could have had a different course. As it stands, we just remember him for The Godfather and little else, despite the fact that he made some great films. He was born in the Bronx, New Jersey, and his mum and dad were Jewish immigrants from Germany. He had a brother and a sister, and his father was a butcher. He studied at Michigan State University, economics, but became interested in acting when he was there and enrolled in acting school. He said, quote, "I never did anything else. In college, I switched majors every 2 weeks, and acting was the only thing that held my interest. The reason I started was to stay away from the meat market. That's where I was headed, to be with the guys who lug beef all day long." He appeared in some off-Broadway productions and then got TV work, and his first major role was in Lady in a Cage opposite Olivia de Havilland as a punk hoodlum in 1964. De Havilland praised his performance, and the following year he got fourth billing in The Glory Guys, a western, scripted by Sam Peckinpah and directed by Arnold Laven. Some names have been changed, but it's a reference to Custer's gross miscalculation of the Sioux Indians at Little Bighorn. Music was by Riz Ortolani.
We'll be right back.
In 66, he got a part in Howard Hawks' Western El Dorado against John Wayne and Robert Mitchum. This film was the second of three that Hawks made with screenwriter Lee Brackett about a retired lawman, played by Wayne in all three. Interestingly enough, the music is almost identical to that used in the TV series Batman, which Nelson Riddle had also scored. He did leave us one of the great Western themes from this film.
Through sunshine and shadow, from darkness till noon, over mountains that reach from the sky to the moon, a man with a dream that will never let go keeps searching to find El Dorado. So ride, only ride to the end of the rainbow. Ride, only ride till you find El Dorado. Sky turns to gray, his body grows weary, he can't find his way, but he'll never turn back, though he's lost in the snow, for he has to find El Dorado. So ride, boldly ride, to the end of the rainbow.
Robert Altman cast him as the astronaut in the film Countdown. He has to survive on the moon for a year because the US wants to land a man on the moon before Russia. Robert Duvall also stars. Remarkably, this film was made 18 months before the first manned trip to the moon, and in the film they used the prototypes of the Gemini spacecraft that were loaned by NASA. It was Altman's return to directing features after he'd been working in television for 10 years. Khan had another couple of breakthrough roles, a Western in 1968 called Journey to Shiloh, and then Francis Ford Coppola's first feature, The Rain People, in 1969. And then the 70s arrived, and so did he. In 1970, he starred in Rabbit Run, an adaptation of a very successful John Updike novel. It was poorly received and unfairly compared to the book, which is a common downfall of many films. I haven't read the novel and I really enjoyed the film. Khan exudes this gentle, sympathetic vibe you can identify with, and his best films all have this quality. He's well supported in this film by Anjanette Comer as the woman he finds after leaving his wife, and Arthur Hill as the priest trying to get him to go back to his wife. Then there's the excellent T.R. Baskin the following year. Candy Spurgeon plays an ambitious young woman who goes to Chicago in search of a new life. When she's there, she meets and gets involved with Peter Boyle first and then James Caan. Both are very good as she comes to grips with living alone in a big city. If you want to get the feel of Chicago without even going there, this is the film to watch.
We'll be right back.
The Godfather came in 1972, of course, and James Caan's career headed skywards after an Academy Award nomination for his role as Sonny Corleone, although he was due to play Michael Corleone until Al Pacino turned up. But he was on a roll now, and suddenly big box office. Mark Rydell's Cinderella Liberty followed in 1973. In this, he plays a sailor whose papers get lost, so he's stuck in Seattle until they can be found. He meets a hooker played by Marsha Mason, and she's excellent, and gets involved with her and her young son. Eli Waller's also very good. It's a great film, and the writer Daryl Ponickson also wrote the source novel for The Last Detail, another very good film about a sailor, starring Jack Nicholson, made that same year.
Hello, such a simple way to start a love affair. Should I jump right in and say how much I care? Would you take me for a madman or a simple-hearted clown? Hello, with affection from a sentimental fool to a little girl who's broken every rule. One who brings me up when all the others seem to let me down. One who's nice to be around. Should I say that it's a blue world without you? Nice words I remember from an old love song, but all wrong, 'cause I never called it love before. This feeling's new, this came with you. And I know that the nicest things have never seemed to last, that we're both a bit embarrassed by your past. But I think there's something special in the feelings that we found, and you're nice to be around, and you're nice to be around.
He cemented his good standing by appearing in flashback scenes in The Godfather Part II, and that same year made two other movies. The Gambler was directed by Carol Rice, and it's a study of a college professor who becomes an addicted gambler, for which he gained a Golden Globe nomination. Lauren Hutton also starred, and look out for an early role by James Woods. Now, this film surpasses the remake with Mark Wahlberg by a long, long way.
Thank you.
The other film in 74 was when he teamed up with Alan Arkin, and they're two San Francisco detectives intent on busting a crime boss in Freebie and the Bean. It's very uneven, but I never mind watching a film set in San Francisco, especially when it's shot by Laszlo Kovacs. There's a great scene between Khan and Paul Koslow in a ladies' room at a baseball stadium towards the end of the movie. In 1975 came Rollerball, Norman Jewison's interesting vision of the future, where the world is run by worldwide corporations and people are kept comfortable so that they comply with the rules. Sound familiar? Their basic instincts are satisfied by a deadly game played in a roulette wheel arena, where teams are allowed to take their opponents out during a struggle to possess a silver ball and score goals with it. It's a clever premise and was based on a short story that first appeared in Esquire magazine. James Caan plays the world's best rollerball player, Jonathan E., who the bosses want to retire against his will. He provides the masses with a hero and an example of individual empowerment, and that's the last thing the powers that be want. We'll be right back. The movie works pretty well, although it could have been improved with a bit of skillful editing. The game sequences are great, but Khan is challenged to continue making his dilemma interesting, and the whole episode with Ralph Richardson could have been lost. In the second half of the 70s, Khan's career stalled. He made The Killer Elite, a Sam Peckinpah thriller with Robert Duvall, but it was disjointed. This was followed by a cameo appearance in Silent Movie, Mel Brooks's comedy, and then a disastrous comedy, Harold and Walter Go to New York, with Elliot Gould and Michael Caine. But he came back in 1980 also as a director with Hide in Plain Sight, based on a true story about the disappearance of a man's ex-wife and two children. It's very well made, and I'm surprised Khan didn't direct any more after this. He was back on track the following year with Michael Mann's Thief, in which he plays a top safecracker taking on one last high-paying job before he retires to settle down with his girlfriend, played by Tuesday Weld. The haunting score was provided by Tangerine Dream. At about this time, he began to suffer from depression and burnout concerning his sister's death. He didn't work for 5 years and then walked off the set of The Holcroft Covenant to be replaced by Michael Caine. He coached in children's sport and then had a car crash. He said, I quote, "I went through some bad times, doing some very self-destructive stuff, you know, when I was on top. I'd got involved in partying and doing all that, and I lost my sister, and basically I got all screwed up in my head. She was like my best friend, and I lost her to leukemia, and I was just a mess. I had a lot of money because I worked a lot and saved it. I had it in a pension plan, and then I lost all my money. My accountant. I just woke up one morning and I didn't have a dime. We're talking about tons, I mean a lot of money, and I was flat broke." He returned to acting in 1987 and heard that Rob Reiner was looking for someone to play Paul Sheldon in Misery, the adaptation of Stephen King's novel. The exceptional Kathy Bates co-stars as the sadistic nurse. Khan continued to work regularly up until his death in 2022. He was in The Yards in 2000, a decent thriller with Mark Wahlberg, Charlize Theron and Joaquin Phoenix, and then in City of Ghosts in 2002, Matt Dillon's directorial debut with Gerard Depardieu, and both are worth watching. He was an avid martial arts lover and trained regularly for well over 30 years, and in his younger years took part in the pro rodeo circuit. The curious thing is that James Caan is remembered for portraying mobsters, yet he only did this a few times in his career, so obviously it's a hangover from his role in The Godfather. But his best films are those in which he showed a more vulnerable side to his character, and those from the early 70s are the ones to catch. You'll be pleased you did. Thanks for listening.